Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Net Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I am Jake Lovett of Cyber Golf. You're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We're still laughing about the Texas joke. I made a comment off the other day. Kelly Blake Moran of Texas would love that. You know, we got to get Kelly Blake Moran on this show again pretty soon. He was great last time we had him. And Jeff, you're from Texas, and you know Kelly, and I'm sure, Steve, that you know Kelly Blake Moran as well. He's a good old-fashioned Texas boy himself. He came on the show, and the first thing he talked about was the Oklahoma Sooners. He says, all of those guys that won that national championship at Oklahoma, you know where they were from? Texas, that's where. If I had my way, they'd never get left back across the border.
there is a rivalry there, although I will tell you that when enrollment for college was down, Oklahoma offered Texas kids this in-state tuition. Actually, when my kids were going through college, they didn't go, but we did have a lot of defections up there. So maybe that'll draw us a little closer together. You should be here October 6th. That's when they do the Texas-Oklahoma game right here, the old historic Cotton Bowl.
Where is it going to be this year? Is it going to be in Austin, or is it going to be in Oklahoma?
Yeah, it's always in Dallas when they play. And actually, I misspoke. They moved it over to Jerry World a few years ago.
Ah, not far from the golf course that you designed for Jerry.
That's right. Fortunately, Jerry was a much better golf course owner than he is a football team owner.
Well, when you got Tony Romo as your quarterback, you know, you're going to have to anticipate that some kind of many things are going to happen.
Well, he did have a career year last year, and if it wasn't for the bad call, who knows what might have happened there.
Now, while we're on the topic of Texas golf, we might as well get to it because you've got a great course that you've designed that we're talking about, Cowboys Golf Club, and Steve is designing a course in Dallas. So let's talk a little bit about your golf courses. Tell us a little bit about Cowboys, Jeff, and then tell us a little bit about what else you're working on.
Well, of course, Cowboys just had its 11th anniversary, and, you know, it was a unique concept. I mean, it was 100 and plus, you know, varies over the years, and then that gives you food, lessons, you know, everything you want out there. It's sort of a real true corporate entertainment venue, and of course, the Cowboys name draws everything in. And we were also fortunate to get some leftover land just below the Lake Grapevine Dam, fully wooded, 100-foot hills. You know, if you played there, you wouldn't think you were in Dallas. You'd think you're down in the hill country. So it was a great opportunity to design that. And I don't know about Steve, but, you know, right now for new courses, you know, I've gone to China. I've got two, one of which I believe will get built, even though the ban is in. And I just signed one near Kansas City. And I actually have a contract in San Antonio, but I'm not 100% sure that's going to get funded. So I don't know, Steve, if I got two new U.S. 18-hole courses this year, what do I got, 40% of the market?
Tell us a little bit about some of the public courses besides Cowboys you've designed that our listeners can go and play. For example, Firekeeper's yours, isn't it?
Yeah, you go to Kansas. I've got three courses there that I've designed, and they're ranked 1, 2, and 3 in all the magazines. The Colbert Hills is a hard one, you know, built for the K-State golf team. Firekeeper, they actually told us to keep it a little easier. You know, it's a casino and resort course. My third one there, kind of in the middle, was Sand Creek Station, which is a flat site near some railroads and not a lot of character that way, but it did host the final USGA Public Championship last year. So it's been well received.
What kind of terrain did you get to design on in those three places?
Well, on two out of the three, it would belie the old saying that Kansas is flat. The other one is, Sand Creek was actually dead flat in the floodplain and whatever, but Colbert Hills has got those 100-foot hills, and you can see forever on some of those. So great terrain. Firekeeper's got it, too.
And tell us a little – I'm sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
I was going to say one of the most exciting projects now, it's a remodel, but it's a course called Superior National, which has been built right on the shores of Lake Superior 15 or 20 years ago. It needed to be freshened up, and every hole has a view of the lake. There's also a rushing rapid stream going through. One of the magazines called it with the top 10 prettiest courses in the world, and we're just getting an opportunity to make the play more like the resort course that it was meant to be. That's one of those deals. Steve has some of these. You can't believe they're paying you to drive up and down the lake and take in those views and work on sites like that. So there's still some good opportunities out there for architects, even though it's slowed down. I'm happy to have any of them, truthfully.
And you have a couple of courses up in Minnesota as well at Giant's Ridge and at the Wilderness.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you got to be the expert out of town to get hired in Minnesota, but it's been good to me. So I'd say Superior National will be my fourth, even because it's a total redo. It's 100 degrees here, in June through August, and it's 70 up there, and they call me up and say, would you make an extra site visit to make it good? And, there's never an issue in my mind to leave home and head to Minnesota in the summer to make, I might have made 100 site visits per course, and I think that has a lot to do with why they turned out so well, just because their weather's so good.
Now, Steve, tell us a little about your course in Dallas.
Well, first off, I'd love to see Jeff's course up in Lake Superior. That sounds fantastic. That sounds like a great venue, so I'm looking forward to learning more about that one.
Well, I tell you, when I come out to check out your work in Dallas, we're all going to play cowboys together.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. I really am.
Hey, Jeff, did you take that stupid silver star out of the fourth fairway, though, or is it still there?
I believe it's still there last time I played. It's been raining all 33 days last month, so I have not been out there since February, but it was there then.
Yeah, Steve, there's a giant Dallas Cowboys logo in the middle of the fourth fairway. You're supposed to aim for it.
that's good. That's all good. And, Jeff and I are going to be together next Friday in Dallas. We're going to be together with Jay Morris, who passed away a couple months ago. We're going to have a celebration of life there. And it's kind of neat that a lot of architects are showing up to remember Jay and remember all his contributions to architecture and the game of golf. So we're looking forward to doing that, seeing all of our friends and seeing Jeff there as well.
It is going to be a phenomenal time. Jay Morris gave us so many wonderful golf courses, especially in the American Southwest. I've played his work at the Boulders and enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, and plus, he's just a good person to be around, too. I had a lot of great memories about Jay. Really did.
Yeah, the terrible loss for golf and for golf architecture.
Right.
Everybody has great Jay Moore stories, so it'll be one of the more jovial memorials I think anybody will be to, because you can't tell a Jay Moore story without smiling. He was a great one.
I think you're right, Jeff. I think you're right. Yep, it'll be a good time. And that's the way Jay would want us to.
Tell us a couple of those interesting stories while we're on the topic.
Well, I'll tell you one. I kind of said this, I don't know, Jeff, if you were there or not, but when I remember Jay was telling a story how he was having a problem with a contractor, and they were having a little discussion, and they decided to delay it and go back to the hotel and have this discussion. And the contractor walked into the room with a quart of scotch, and said, okay, we got to resolve this issue. And he took the cap off the quart of scotch, and he took the cap and threw it right in the garbage can. And he said, okay, now, and he put the bottle down on the table. He said, okay, now let's talk. So Jay said he knew he was in for a long discussion at that point in time. With the quart of scotch.
I'll tell you, Jay, the best one I remember is telling. He told one about Jack Nicklaus, some long ago Ryder Cup, playing some young Englishman just by the luck of the draw, and gets on the first tee and, says everything right. Oh, I've heard your game is wonderful. This is going to be a great match. And at that point, Barbara Nicklaus comes up and says, Jack, where should I meet you? And without thinking about it, he says, I should be done by the 13th hole. Pull the car up there.
I remember that one. Yeah. We'll be done on 13. Yeah.
Yeah. And were they done on 13?
According to Jay, they were. I have not checked the record. But,
I don't know about that. Yeah.
geek. I love Nicholas. And you have to love J2. He did a lot of great stuff with Nicholas. He had a nice run with him, as did Scott Miller had a nice run with Nicholas for a while, too, before branching off and doing places like Coeur d'Alene and such.
Right, right.
And in Bunching, Arizona as well. Well, tell us a little bit about your course in Dallas, Steve.
Yeah, it's an interesting project. We're starting, actually, June 1. We're going to break ground. It's an existing golf course that we're actually going to build a whole new golf course on. It's a total rerouting. We're going to build a brand new course where an old course used to be. We've got a lake in the middle of it, a big lake. We're reconfiguring the lake. It's a big, we had a big core permit to do so. And it's different than a lot of people, than a lot of projects that we've had in the past. My client said to me, kind of like our client did at Isleworth, he said, if we can't build a golf course to challenge the best players in the world, I don't want to do this thing. So, that's kind of our goal. But then, of course, we've got a lot of people there that are going to be in their 60s and early 70s that will need to get around the golf course as well. So, it's an interesting project for an interesting group of people.
And have you given any thought to, already mapping out the holes and any ideas on some particularly good holes we can look forward to? Or any interesting landforms we should look for?
You know, Jay, overall, what we're trying to do, I mean, water conservation and turf reduction is a big movement in our game moving forward. From a maintenance perspective, playability perspective, and things like that. So we're really trying to develop this golf course to be a pretty good example of how we might be a very sustainable golf course, as well as a very good shot-making golf course, and try to really get this golf course to feel and look like you're in a real natural landscape setting. That's kind of the big emphasis on it. So it's going to be it's a big project from a financial, monetary point of view, and landscaping is a very big part of that.
Yeah, I could probably say it. Steve can't, but since I live here, he asked if the site was good. Well, this is Dallas, so if he had tumbleweed as a specimen tree, that would be a good thing. So he's going to have to build that from scratch, and I look forward to seeing what he does with it. I think they called the right guy when they said they wanted a tournament quality course out there.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jeff. It'll be a unique challenge, but we're looking forward to it. We really are.
Now, you're also doing work at one of everybody's old favorites, or I guess I should say new favorites. It is a modern classic, Old Memorial. Everybody was raving about it before, but now you're going to make it even better. So tell us a little bit about what Old Memorial is all about, and then tell us a little bit about what you're doing to make it even better.
Well, Jeff will appreciate this. We built a golf course there, and it opened in 1997, so almost 18 years ago. And it's for the fellows that own the Outback Steakhouse, and they're very, very avid golfers. They're tremendous people. I was with them just a couple hours ago, and they said, okay, it's time to address some of the issues. We haven't looked at the bunkers. There's new Bermuda grasses that have been introduced into the market. We want to be modernized. We want to be up to speed. And so I was able to sit down with them and say, guys, for a guy like me and a guy like Jeff to have a golf course, it would be great for Jeff to go back to Jerry Jones in a few years and say, hey, I like a mulligan. I'd like to kind of tweak the things that I see that maybe I think could be a little better, because we all learn and we all grow with time. So I went to the owner there, and we're able to go back, and he's given us a mulligan. We're going to be able to go back and tweak the golf course a little bit. It's kind of interesting. In today's world, we want to be kind of the place to go for the modern day player who hits, for the young modern day player. So we're lengthening the golf course substantially as well. We're going to go from 7,400 to 76 and change. So
I have to tell you,
tell you. What was a long day for me, for my keys. You're going to make it even longer, are you?
Well, you remember, Jay, you've seen my son hit the golf ball.
Well, the thing... go ahead.
One of the top was that not too long ago, and I said, okay, we got to move these keys back. I understand where the next generation is coming from there.
It is
the hard part about that is any course opened in 1997, that's the year the Pro V1 came out, right? So it was obsoleted, just about right then, wasn't it?
You know, Jeff, that's an interesting point because we designed that guy in 1994 when we first started work on that project. And in 94, I was playing a lot of golf with Nick Faldo and Nick Price. Those were two of the best players in the game. And I knew exactly how far they hit every single club in the bag. And I knew how Greg Norman hit the ball. So that golf course was designed for those players, you know, with those yardages in mind, with the number one player in mind from the, of course, from the back tee, so to speak. The technology started to make it a big jump in 95 and then it really jumped forward in 2000, 2001 with the introduction of the Pro V1, which was actually the marrying of the characteristics of the soft golf ball, the Bellotta golf ball with the hard golf ball. They married those two characteristics together so the ball started going a little further. That plus the titanium driver and everything like that. So our golf course immediately became outdated. And though we've added tees through the years, this is our chance to make it, to kind of reintroduce those shot values that we originally had in mind.
But with the rumbled terrain that you have, and with the little mounding that you have for people to aim at off the tee so that they can catch the catch basins and the sort of speed ramps there, it still is a thinking man's golf course that's very difficult to overpower, isn't it?
You've got to really be able to manage yourself on that golf course. The golf course will sucker you in. It really will. I mean, we give you a bowl line to play on, but if you take on that bowl line and you miss cue, you can easily get yourself into trouble. And if you don't manage yourself properly, you just dig yourself further into a hole. Conversely, if you take the safe route, you can avoid all that. But the course always attempts. Jack Nicklaus said one time, the most difficult discipline in the game of golf is to shoot away from your target.
Yes.
So we always tempt you to go at your target, but that line is always riddled with problems.
I've always loved the doctrine of deception, where you get to pick your line yourself, but you got to be really, really, really careful, because if you don't execute that shot, you're in trouble, or worse still, if you don't pick the right shot in the first place. So let's talk a little bit about, guys, I want you each to go through the public golf courses you've designed. And I want you to pick out one hole, the most interesting hole you can pick, where you will invite Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Patrick Reed to each play this one hole for a $1 million skin of their own money. Okay, those four guys are just going to chip in $1 million, and whoever gets the skin gets to keep the dough. But they have to play a public course you design so that the listeners can go out and play it themselves and see for themselves. Jeff, you go first.
Well, I think my most interesting holes along those lines are at the quarry. That's up in Minnesota, a lot of Minnesota. And, the old quarry gave it some Pine Valley kind of characteristics. And one of everybody's favorite holes up there is the 13th, where we use some of the old shelves to kind of give you a high fairway, a low fairway, and then the green sits, with a very, very narrow
neck. Sure, yes.
So you can drive it, you can hit the high fairway, you can hit the low fairway. And the green is huge and has some interesting contours for me, too. So I think that's the one they'd want to take on.
Who do you think would walk away with the skin and why?
Well, I'm going to go with Jordan Spieth because he's here. I'd go down the street and I'd coach him a little bit and tell him what to do.
Now, what par is the hole, and how long is it from the back tees they'd be playing?
Well, it's a par four. It's about 315 to 25, somewhere in there. And
short and sexy then.
Yeah, but like I say, the ramp up, we were going to leave with just a big grass bank in front of it. So we realized we couldn't find a way to get the greens mix into the green. So the contractor asked if he could build a little ramp up, and it turns out to be one of those sucker punches Steve was talking about at Old Memorial. You know, you see the ramp, why couldn't you hit one 10 or 15 yards wide, you know, from 315 yards away? But people end up in all sorts of places, deep grass and whatnot. So it's a real three to six or three to seven kind of hole at 325 yards. Those are always the fun ones.
Seriously, you can say more in 315 yards than you can in 475. All right, how about you, Steve? Your turn. You pick one.
You know, it's kind of an easy answer. I'm going to go with the 12th hole of Fort Myers Country Club, which we just did last year. And it's a public course. They'll do about 70,000 rounds their first year of operation. And the 12th hole is a par 3. It's kind of interesting. We built a teeing pad. I call it a teeing ground that you can play the golf course depending on the hole location. You can play it anywhere from 120 yards for an elite player all the way up to 220 yards. With a back hole location, the back part is a very deep green. The back half of the green is kind of just, runs away from you. It's a bit of a redan. The back part of the green slopes from the golfer's left to right and middle to back, so to speak. And it really, with the back hole location and the back tee location, it really suckers you into, challenging and hitting the exact shot for the occasion. And during the season, the predominant wind is, from the golfer's left to right. And it really, really suckers you into trying to hit it into the right area there. But the safe play is short, either short of the green or the short front part of the green where you've got a long approach putt. But where do you want to be heroic, off the tee, or do you want to be heroic with the long putt? And, for the bold player, it's a risk reward. If you take it all on your first shot, and you succeed, then you've got a makeable birdie putt. If you miscue, you miscue right or you miscue left, anything hole high is extremely difficult up and down. So I would pick that hole as the one skin hole right there.
Who's going to walk away with the skin?
I'd pick Tiger. Because Tiger can hit that high screaming fade from 220 yards. And he's as good as there is at it right there. He may not have it right now, but he'll have it again. He's pretty good at it.
Well, you know, I don't know with all of the news that broke this week, you know, and seeing how poorly he finished at Sawgrass, I wonder if his head's not in the right place right now.
You know, Jay, I'll agree with that, but if you look at any great golfer, and I mean everybody with the exception of Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player kind of fits in this category as well, they all put their playing career in a 7-year period. You look at Faldo, you look at Price, you look at Ben Hogan, you look at Lee Trevino, they all won, and Tom Watson, they all won all their tournaments within a 6 or 7 year span. Tiger put 2 7-year spans together. So, you know, I'm not totally counting this guy out completely just yet, but I'm just saying he had a phenomenal career that lasted much longer than most great players have ever had a career. So something to consider.
It looks like we were going to start to see a bit of a resurgence. You know, he played so well at Augusta, but my point on that is that he always plays well at Augusta. If you're one of those guys that plays well at Augusta, you will play well at Augusta for your entire career. And if you're not, You're not, okay? The two examples being on opposite ends, Jack Nicklaus and Lee Trevino. Lee Trevino, one of the most gifted players ever, okay? The sand fleas used to love how he'd come swaggering on up with that big grin of his, cracking jokes and making everybody laugh and swinging his hips and that whole catty hustler swing. But he could never conquer Augusta because he just couldn't draw the ball.
Well, Lee, let me say that first. When I first watched Lee Trevino play golf, which was 1967, he had everything with a big sweeping hook. And then that was before he got on tour. I watched him play down in Houston, and he hit this low-running duck hook, basically. Then he got on tour and he learned to fade the golf ball. So he could hit a hook when he wanted to hit a hook. The fact of the matter is, and I think he'd even admit this, that he was somewhat uncomfortable in that environment at Augusta. He was never a high ball hitter, so I think that hurt him during those times at Augusta. But he wasn't real comfortable within that atmosphere there. Because of his background, where he came from, how he grew up. I think, you know, if he was right here, he'd admit that as well.
Well, I do know that he used to handle situations like that with great aplomb, though. My favorite being the time he went to the British Open and shook hands with the Prince of Wales and goes, "You ever shake hands with a Mexican before?"
Yeah. Let me say this. I've watched all the greats play golf. And he is, without a doubt, my favorite that I've ever watched play.
Jeff, you're from Texas. You must know all about Horizon Hills, okay? And the famous battle with Ray Floyd. What about the time when Lee Trevino won the U.S. Open? He goes, "Now that I won a major, I'm not going to be a Mexican no more. I think I'm going to be a Spaniard."
Yeah. Well, you know, we know Lee. You know, we've done some work with him, he actually called him one time with a proposal to do something down in Mexico, you know, one of those resorts, and he said, I really don't want to go down there. I'm an American. That scares me a little bit going down to Mexico, so. He also gets very serious when he talks about his background. You know, his old boss from El Paso had to check the white box on his PGA Tour application, you know, for him to even get in, and when you get him in private, he gets very serious. Well, you know, the other interesting thing, I mean, is I sat with him an hour one time when he was debating between whether he should be ranked 6th, 7th, or 8th all time. And then he said he'd had those discussions with some of the other guys. And, you know, I mean, it was very important to him to assess just how high he ranked in the all-time rankings.
Well,
that's interesting because I put him right at the top. He was the best. He was the absolute best ball striker ever.
He topped Nicklaus a whole bunch of times, and he won 6 majors.
Yeah, but he could work his golf ball better than anybody of that generation.
He did it in style. He was able to laugh at himself. He made golf a more fun place. Okay. My other favorite Lee Trevino memory was the time at St. Andrews when he goes, he's leading the British Open at St. Andrews, gets to the fifth hole, "Oh no, I've done hit it to the wrong flag, and I'm stupid enough to hit it to the wrong flag." And that was the end. He 3-putted from 100 feet, and he ended up fading, and Nicklaus won the 78 championship.
Well, Jay, I got one more story. You know, I'm 12. I go watch the U.S. Open at Hazeltine. And he had just signed an endorsement deal with Faultless Golf Balls, but of course the rumor was, you know, he's still playing Titleist or whatever. And so I'm watching him. He hits it in the rough right near me, and I'm leaning over to see the logo on the ball, which is facing down instead of up. And I must have been staring at it a lot longer, I thought, because next thing I know, Trevino's standing over me. He says, "Son, you got to back up because a 7-iron in your forehead is not the souvenir you want from the U.S. Open." So that's when I met Lee Trevino.
I am Jake Lum of Sidewalk. You're listening to the Golf News Net Radio Network.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network.